You're listening to UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell, and this is The Smartest Doctor in the Room, where real medicine meets real answers. Each episode, I bring you honest conversations with some of the brightest minds in health and medicine. Let's get started. Toxic mold exposure in the home is dangerous to your health. I see patients every week in my practice who are suffering from the effects of toxic mold. And in many cases, they were living in a home where they didn't even know mold was present. That's why I recommend to patients who suspect they are ill, possibly from toxic mold exposure, to obtain a test from Immunolytics, a company that specializes in mold detection with simple mold plates for your home or office. The mold plates are put in various rooms of your home and then left open for an hour. They are then closed up and you observe them for 5 days. If the mold plates show growth, you can send them back to Immunolytics and the company will analyze them and interpret the results for you. Please see the link in the show notes to order your mold plates from Immunolytics and use the code SmartestDoc to get a 5% discount. Today's podcast will be a wide-ranging discussion on the role of folate, also known as vitamin B9 and vitamin B12, where deficiencies can cause disease despite a regular diet. We're also going to dive into the recent headline news about the potential use of a folate enhancer called leucovorin as a therapy for autism. And I also want to get to discussing with my guests the MTHFR gene mutation and what that means. Now, President Trump made headlines as usual, but not about the Middle East or tariffs. He jumped into healthcare along with his Secretary of Health, Robert Kennedy Jr., touting that the drug leucovorin should be used as a treatment for autism. Why this drug? That's one of the topics we're going to cover with my guest today. Today, I'm going to be speaking with Professor Edward Quadros from SUNY Downstate Medical School. Dr. Quadros' research has focused on the link between folate and autism. Professor Quadros is a world expert on folate regulation in the body, and he's even invented a test that detects a defect in folate uptake to the brain called the folate receptor antibody test, or FRAT for short. So I'm really excited to welcome Professor Quadros to the podcast.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to participate in this discussion.
Okay. All right. So Professor Quadros, I was looking a little bit at your background. This interests me. You got your PhD, I believe, in England, and I think your work was on B12 and folate metabolism. Correct me if I was wrong, I'm just curious, what interested you to pursue this area of research at that time?
So my story is one that basically dragged me into the field rather than me pursuing.
Okay,
right from my undergrad time when I started research, I was actually supposed to work on the immunology of tuberculosis meningitis in the neuropathology department. And so happened that the PhD student who was working on this had to leave. So they kind of pushed me into B12 and folate. And that was more than 40 years ago. I'm still doing the same thing.
Well, I guess it was serendipitous, or you were destined to do this. So, it was an accidental career move.
That's right. I was the accidental tourist into the field.
Yeah. And what was your interest? I mean, because B12 was pretty well known at this point. And I mean, folate, they were discovered. They're known to be essential vitamins. What were you working on? What were you hoping? I mean, I assume that you didn't have any clue that you'd be dealing with the autism world back then.
No, I joined an eminent neuropathologist. This is in Bombay, India, at the Grant Medical College, because I was fascinated with the brain. So I wanted to work in neuropathology. And so I took on this particular position in neuropathology to do my master's degree with a neuropathologist. And then it so happens that I got from immunology, I got moved to B12 and folate. It's interesting that all the way, you know, decades later, I've come back to my passion, that is the brain and immunology.
All right. So you know, that's actually a good segue into some of the things I want to talk to you about. You know, Again, I'm a medical doctor in the medical community. It's fairly standard for the past several decades that obstetricians recommend to pregnant mothers to take prenatal vitamins and specifically folic acid to prevent neural tube defects. I was wondering if you knew, like, how this was discovered, that folic acid was important for that. Was it in mice? Was it in humans? Like, how did
No.
they determine that
So
this was an issue?
going back to the 80s, and even no, in fact, going back to 1936, Lucy Wills, who discovered vitamin B9, and she was actually working in India at the Hafkin Institute. What she noticed as a GP was that a lot of women were coming in with anemia, especially during pregnancy. And she was trying to link anemia of pregnancy with a nutrient of some sort. And what she, at that time, if you remember, these are the times when micronutrients were being discovered. And a lot of these new micronutrients were being identified. And Lucy Wills was on the right track. She wondered if this was a micronutrient and what could that potentially be. It is around this time that UC Davis team was working also on trying to identify micronutrients. Actually, they ended up in the early 40s purifying folic acid from spinach. Lots of spinach was extracted to identify this so-called micronutrient that was causing anemia. Now, Lucy Wills, aware of this fact, started treating her patients with Marmite. You may have heard the product Marmite, which is autolyzed yeast, became
Oh,
a good
okay.
source of micronutrients during Second World War when food was scarce, especially
Right.
animal protein was scarce. So Lucy Wills, aware of the fact that she was dealing with a purely, primarily a vegetarian population, decided to treat them with Marmite. And she saw a response. And it is later on that it was realized that it was actually folic acid and B9.
Well, why? That's a great point. My question is interesting because, we here in the United States, Western diet. We have a lot of problems with our Western diet, but honestly, getting enough vitamins shouldn't be one of them. Why was it then
Necessary.
to supplement with folic acid just to be extra sure?
Okay, so realizing that there was a connection between pregnancy outcome, miscarriage, difficulty in getting pregnant, and all that connected to folate, time, because neurotube defect was then about probably around 1 in 800 to 1 in 1,000 in the United States, and it was even worse in countries like Ireland, So in the US, there was a lot of discussions. We used to meet at these FACIP summer conferences to try and decide how do we basically replenish the population, not just individuals, but the whole population with folate, raise their level, and see if that would reduce neurotube defect pregnancy. Why? Because by this time, it was realized using small clinical trials that folate supplementation during pregnancy was a good thing, and there was a chance of reducing neurotube defects. So, in the 90s, the FDA got involved and the NIH and so forth decided that to fortify food so that the general population would get more folate and that would increase the folate status in the general population. And what this did was, in fact, it did reduce the prevalence of neurotube defect in the population, but only about 20 to 30%. And so we were working on folate and B12 pretty much all the time. And we wondered why is it that dietary intervention with folate didn't have a greater effect? And then we also wondered why, despite the fact that women have normal folate status, still have a neurotube defect pregnancy. Because women who had the neurotube defect pregnancy or spina bifida children were not folate deficient by the general criteria. Their blood folate status was normal. They did not have any elevated metabolites indicating folate deficiency. And so we wondered, why is this? What is going on here? And we were doing studies in an animal model, a rat model, to look at the effect of folate deficiency. And one problem we ran into is we couldn't get them pregnant as we made them folate deficient. So we were looking at other means, and the lab was studying folate receptor alpha for a long time. In fact, the lab, a postdoc in actually pure cloning the receptor at that time. So we wondered if what if we blocked receptor with an antibody? So we made antibodies to the rat folate receptor, gave it to pregnant rats, and we were surprised that it had a dramatic effect. So in fact, we were wondering, realized that the rats were pregnant, but after giving the antibody, 3 weeks later, they were not pregnant. So we decided to open up the rats, count the embryos, and then give the antibody. And lo and behold, the antibody dose we were giving was too high, and it was completely resolving the embryos. It was killing the embryos.
Let me ask you this though. I'm just curious. This because this is like almost. It's amazing that you guys stayed on this line of thought. Like when you saw the patients, the women had normal folate. What still made you think that folate was responsible for the neural tube defect?
Hi everyone. I know you may already know from listening to my podcast that I specialize in treating patients with toxic mold exposure. It's become a serious problem for many years as we deal with the hurricanes and floods throughout the country. You know, even simple bathroom water leaks from a toilet in your home over time can contribute to mold buildup. I can help patients that suffer from the symptoms of toxic mold, but I also rely on the patients getting their current residents inspected so they are not continually being exposed. My go-to person for mold exposure is Joe Reese. Joe is a certified mold inspector with decades of experience. He is super thorough and gives you a straightforward assessment and tells you whether it's safe to live in your home or if there is mold. I should know, I used Joe when I moved to my new home 4 years ago. Fortunately, when I moved in, I smelled an unusual odor in my basement and I immediately called Joe. He came over with his instruments and he found the problem. Afterwards, I had remediation and the problem was solved. Joe does inspections all throughout the country. He welcomes calls to his cell phone at 908-451-4592. You can also reach him by email at jprconsultants7929@gmail.com. Remember, mold in your home is not a good thing, but thankfully it's a problem that can be fixed.
Well, that information was there from the population studies and
I mean, like, did
pregnancy
it throw you
studies.
off? Like you said, oh, there's not, they're not deficient. Why would the baby be, why would the fetus be deficient?
No, so that clue came from our animal studies where we made the rats folate deficient. And then subsequently, when we gave them to the folate receptor, we were seeing dramatic effects on the embryonic development. And if we reduced the dose of the antibody, we were seeing malformation of the brain. And when we further reduced the antibody dose, we saw pups that were born appearing pr pretty much normal, but they had behavioral deficits. So based on that, we said, okay, there is a connection here between the antibody and folate deficiency in the fetus causing brain abnormalities. This is when we went and looked at women with a history of neural tube defect pregnancy and found that 70% of these women had the antibody to the folate
Oh,
receptor.
wow. Is that the test
That,
that you invented? Is that the
yeah,
test
so
that?
that was the first paper we published in 2002 in New England Journal of Medicine.
Oh, wow. That's huge. This
Okay.
is really big stuff. Wow.
So when we published that paper, independently, there was a pediatric neurologist who's been studying developmental delays and developmental abnormalities in young children for a while. And he was getting these kids who appeared normal at birth, but around 3 to 6 months of age, they started developing regression, in behavior, in
Wow, that's really important,
milestones, and
right?
so forth. And he looked at all other metabolites, he looked at genes involved. He couldn't find any genetic abnormality, and but what, he made one seminal observation that all of these kids had low CSF folate.
Cerebrospinal fluid
That
folate.
is correct. And
What?
so,
They did spinal taps on these kids because of the
yes, he
behavioral
did spinal
issues?
taps on these kids and found
Wow.
that most of them had low CSF folate. And he was wondering why do they have low CSF folate even though they don't have any gene abnormalities. This is when he saw our paper in New England Journal of Medicine about women having folate receptor or antibodies and developing fetal abnormalities. He connected the two and he said, could it be an autoantibody to the folate receptor? And he asked us to participate in his studies. What we found out from his patients was that 89% of these kids had the autoantibody to the folate receptor.
Did the mothers have them also?
No, not necessarily.
So
So,
it's the child with
okay.
the
No.
autoantibody.
The child in this case, the first study, which we published in 2004, had where we described 89% of these kids had the antibody to the folate receptor and they were responding to high dose folinic acid treatment.
Okay, this is huge, obviously critically important. But again, I mentioned in the introduction, Dr. Vandewater in UCSD. I don't know if you know her. She
Yes, I
works
know her.
in the field
Yes,
in immunology. She's like an immunologist.
Yep.
But she was looking at the maternal autoantibodies. I mean, so this is like two different, views of what's going on, right?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Let me go back and elaborate on that.
Okay.
Maternal antibodies. So we now know there is a connection between maternal antibodies, paternal antibodies, and the child developing antibodies, all leading to developmental disorders. And the prognosis is really worse if both parents are positive for the antibody.
For the folate, no, or the maternal.
No, for the cerebral folate deficiency, autism. We're talking about autism now. Children
Right.
with low CSF folate. If mother has antibodies,
But I'm sorry, what's the antibody? Folate receptor?
It's always, yeah, we're only talking about the folate receptor.
No, because I think because Dr. Vandewater was talking about a different autoantibody, or maybe
Yes,
I'm
he
wrong.
was talking about a number of different antibodies,
Yes, right.
brain proteins.
Okay.
Nothing to do with our studies.
Right, okay.
Okay. So what we found out that kids who are in the autism spectrum, about 70% of them came out positive for the folate receptor autoantibody.
Wow. This
and
is like
these
really
kids,
huge.
again, it ranges from low functioning autism. What we found out that the outcome was really bad if both parents were positive for the antibody, because the child not only gets maternal and paternal epigenetic or genetic effects, it is also the child then, during fetal development, gets exposed to the maternal antibodies throughout the 9 months of pregnancy. And that is what makes the outcome really bad.
Why wouldn't if they've had the antibody, why didn't they have a problem? Like, they were just like a carrier?
They are a carrier, yeah, obviously.
So they had less of an antibody, maybe like a less of an antibody level. I mean, I'm just trying to understand.
That is correct. Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that. So is this genetic autoantibody?
No, it's an autoimmune disorder. It's an autoantibody to the folate receptor. The women develop, the men develop, and it affects on pregnancy outcome. It has effect on fetal outcome.
And so why isn't this screened for? This seems to be super important.
Of course, this is a million-dollar question. Now I'm asking
because it's a
why
lot of
don't they
money to
screen
do
for?
This screening?
So my objective here is to screen the parents and prevent autism in the offspring.
Wow. Wow. I mean, look, this is, I've done a lot of these interviews. I mean, I'm coming on our 200th, but this is like really mind blowing because with autism, it's always been such a mystery. And the vaccine, the vax people, and then we're going to get to that after a little bit.
Yes.
But what you're basically saying is this could probably be screened for, but when could it be screened for? I mean, like, as you're saying, if two parents had positive tests, you'd have to, genetically, essentially counsel them, or I don't know. What do you do?
So before conceiving, the parents have to be, basically
tested.
Go through the whole thing and get tested. And if they are positive, they should basically be on folinic acid before conceiving, and the mother throughout pregnancy for a
Oh,
favorable
wow. So there's a
outcome.
solution to this.
I think there is a solution to this. So when we published the 2004 paper in New England Journal of Medicine on
Yeah.
serine folate deficiency, its connection to developmental disorders and autism, Robert Schwartz, who is one of the editors of New England Journal, wrote a beautiful editorial to accompany that paper. And as an
But what
immunologist,
year was that, if you mind me saying? I want to get it.
2004. It was 2004.
2004, Schwartz.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. He's an immunologist training and an editor of New England Journal of Medicine. He
Yes.
wrote a very provocative editorial.
Provocative. In what
Yeah.
way?
In a way, basically, he went back to you're an immunologist. He went Landsteiner and the identification of
Oh, right. Of the
immunity.
different on the bloods, right.
The term horror autos was used at that time because they had no idea what autoimmunity was.
Right.
And so he, really discussed that. And we had in our discussion indicated that milk intake may be a trigger for the autoantibodies going up in these kids.
Where did that come from?
Oh, where did that come from?
I
So,
mean, I deal in allergy sometimes, so we know about allergy antibodies, but
yeah.
why would
So,
you're saying a pregnant mother drinking milk could generate these autoantibodies?
yes. Okay.
Wow.
One observation that we made was that these were getting worse when they switched from mother's milk to formula, like such as cow's milk
Oh, fascinating. Okay,
or
that's
goat
another
milk,
huge
whatever the
difference.
formula contains. They were getting worse. So we did actually a clinical trial. We took kids who were for the antibody, put them on a totally milk-free diet for 6 months, and their antibody titers dropped.
Wow.
Okay. Then we let them go back on milk, and that antibody titers went up.
Why would milk trigger like a folate autoantibody? Any clue
So
to that?
go back to these kids with in the autism spectrum. They always have GI issues.
Oh,
They
right.
have
Now we think it's the
inflammation of the
gut, right.
gut. So the gut barrier, immune barrier in the gut, is
Right.
compromised. You're going to expose, and milk
That's
contains a lot
fascinating.
of folate
Okay.
receptor. It's the antigen.
Right.
Okay. And as you know, that the gut barrier does not develop until from birth until about the first year of life.
Right. I mean, that's why these children are not getting diagnosed, I'm sure, till 2 or 3 years old. They're
That's
getting
right.
this
That
is all going on then.
that's because the tests developed for autism, they're only from age 3 onwards.
Right.
But now we are beginning to look even younger and younger, see
Younger. Yeah,
if
and
we can
the
treat
gut
them.
microbiome is fascinating from the moment a child exits the mom's, vaginal area, hopefully not cesarean. Wow, this is unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to circle back to this. I have a couple of questions I want to, as amazing as this is, I want to understand a little bit better too, and for our listeners about the relationship between B12 and folate. Now, just so I can clarify this for the listeners, B12, we all know is an important vitamin in memory, immune system. I mean, we can go on and on. Either animal protein or supplements. Can't get it from fish.
Or microbial sources.
Right. And folate, really, on the other hand, is known from green leafy vegetables, right? I mean, it's not
That's right.
from animal protein.
No, mostly from fruits and
Fruits.
vegetables. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So what is the relation? And like, why are these two vitamins? Because folate's considered B9 and B12. I know also we're always measuring. I remember back in my medical training, like they used to always say also, be careful if you have a patient that has anemia or what we call a microscopic anemia, that you don't just treat with B12, that you make sure you don't miss a folate deficiency because it can be masked or something. So why are these two intertwined? Is there a reason? Are they
Yes, so both vitamins, they metabolically interact.
interact?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the key enzyme in synthase,
Say that again, I'm sorry.
methionine synthase,
Methionine,
the
right, methionine,
enzyme
right, which
where the vitamins interact. Okay. Now, as you know, we need a lot of folate on a daily basis. If
we
you
do, we
stop,
need a lot of folate in our diet and our
yes,
supplements.
absolutely. You need about a minimum of 200 micrograms of folate a day to
How
maintain.
much? I'm sorry, how much?
200 micrograms.
200 micrograms. What would that be like eating a couple of apples or something?
I think if you ate a normal diet that included vegetables, fruits,
Right, you should be getting that.
and meat, meats are a source of folate because it's stored in the meat, it's stored in the liver, it's stored in the muscle,
Okay.
it's stored in the kidney. So you are getting from there also. But yes, clearly green leafy vegetables, fruits are a major source of folate.
There were, I think it was children who had homocystinuria or whatever, and their arteries were all clogged. They didn't have, it wasn't atherosclerosis from cholesterol, whatever. And he said, this is a problem. And unfortunately, that was the time when the political forces were very much in favor of, oh, cholesterol's the enemy. And he lost his job at Harvard and the whole thing. But, I think it swung back again. A lot of people hear about the MTHFR gene defect. I mean, it seems to be like a lot more common than people realize, and people panic about it causing depression. I know it's associated with thrombosis. So maybe tell us a little bit about that if you can.
So, okay, going back to Killian McCulkey, I think
Yes,
McCauley,
Killian McCulkey,
McCauley,
thank you.
yeah, was his name. See, he identified this pathology in children with cystine synthase deficiency. It's a different enzyme, but it causes very high levels of homocysteine in the
Right,
blood.
which is related to methionine, right? Because if it
Yeah,
doesn't.
no, it raises irrespective of the methionine synthase enzyme, the cystathionine synthase deficiency causes high levels of homocysteine accumulation. Okay? Because the methionine synthase is a rate-limiting enzyme step. So the most of the homocysteine has to go through cystathionine synthase back to cysteine as an amino acid. But what happens in these kids is they have a genetic defect of the cystathionine synthase. That is why they accumulate hundreds of micromolar homocysteine. That becomes toxic because it homocystinylates proteins. It interacts with the endothelial lining,
That's right.
the arteries. It causes basically lipid peroxidation and plaque formation, and
Yeah.
platelets aggregate, and so forth.
I have to translate because what I tell patients when I'm checking their home, you're getting an amazing biochemistry
Okay.
explanation. But what I explain to patients is this, because I read this somewhere, I thought it was really a fascinating analogy. They said, picture this, you have an artery and homocysteine levels are high. And essentially what it does is it pokes a little hole in the artery. And then the cholesterol trucks start coming in with the LDL and paste over it. And
That's
that's
right.
essentially what narrows the artery. So that's why, I consider it an important other factor to look at when it, if it's a concern about coronary disease or any type of vascular disease.
If you've been following the podcast, you may know I practice holistic functional medicine and immunology. In fact, at Mitchell Medical Group, we've been treating chronic fatigue patients for 3 decades. It's critical in this work to have a trusted pharmacy that can compound medications for our sensitive patients' needs. ITC Pharmacy has been our go-to pharmacy the entire time. They can make medications ranging from thyroid hormones to dye-free medications for all of our highly sensitive, even allergic patients. If you or your holistic doctor are looking for these very specific patient medications, you can contact ITC at 888-349-5453. They have licenses throughout the country and can have medications delivered right to your doorsteps. My patients have been so pleased with their service, and you will be too.
Okay. What more about this MTHFR gene?
Okay,
People
I
associate
know
with
there you
behavioral
know
issues, depression.
okay, there's a lot of
Do you think it's way too
complications.
overblown?
I think it is way too overblown. So it's not a gene defect, it's a polymorphism.
Okay.
Okay.
Explain that. Explain that to the
Okay.
listeners.
That means there's a triplet change in the codon that makes another amino acid instead of the other one. I don't remember which is which. What that does is it makes the enzyme, that means the enzyme MTHFR becomes thermolabile at 40 degrees. Okay, but at 37 degrees, which is your body is at, it seems to behave fine. And this has been shown in the test tube experimentally. So I'm not sure why this big deal about the polymorph or MTHFR polymorphism.
Okay, no, I appreciate you saying that because I also have patients who panic. I personally didn't go into a panic myself either. I said, I mean, so many people must have this and they're fine. I mean, maybe there are since I just did a, will that gene though make you prone to having a B12 or no?
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now, if you have low folate, there is a chance that MTHFR with the polymorphism doesn't operate very efficiently.
Okay.
So as long as your folate status is normal, your body temperature is not 40 degrees centigrade, you're okay.
All right. I don't like to be that hot anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So we don't have to worry about too much with that. And B12 and folate, I think we've kind of clarified a bunch of that. Okay. I want to go back to the autism thing because, again, what you're saying is so important. I mean, the fact that you came up with this test is amazing. So yeah, the big headline news again, why you got attention, you know, came out of the secrecy, was this whole thing about leucovorin. Now, yes, again, in my medical training, I just recall, I really didn't understand a lot back 40 years ago when I was in residency, but I remember we used to give leucovorin along with chemotherapy agents because apparently the chemotherapy would lower the folate or folic acid in these patients. It would deplete them, and that could cause other issues. So they were given this. But now, apparently, there's been an increased interest that leucovorin, and as you'll explain, as a folate enhancer, can still help mitigate the symptoms of autism if given early enough. Is that what?
Yeah. So just to reiterate, you know, folinic acid was introduced to basically counteract the effects of chemotherapy, the toxicity of chemotherapy.
Right. The toxicity. Okay.
Toxicity of chemotherapy. Why? Remember, in the 50s, methotrexate was discovered. 5-fluorouracil was discovered. Potent anti-cancer drugs by basically blocking the folate pathway. Methotrexate blocks the enzyme dihydrofolate reductase.
Right.
And 5-fluorouracil blocks thymidylate synthase. Both of these are directly involved in folate pathway, 1-carbon metabolism, purine pyrimidine synthesis, and DNA synthesis. So when you block this, DNA synthesis is blocked. And so therefore, it becomes very toxic, not just to cancer cells, but normal cells also. So when you give methotrexate or 5-FU as therapy, you're now producing a lot of toxicity due to normal cells getting killed too. So in order to reduce...
I'm sorry, the normal cells are getting killed. Why?
Because it's acting on both cancer cell as well as normal cell.
Right.
You need those two enzymes.
But wait, by not having the folate?
No, by giving a patient methotrexate,
that's
blocking the folate pathways.
It's
not depleting. It's actually blocking the enzymes.
Enzymes. So you need the folic acid to get the enzyme pathway going.
That's right.
Otherwise, the cells could die.
That's right.
Normal cells.
Yes. Okay.
So that's critical. That's really critical. So,
folinic acid was introduced because it's a form of folate, participates in purine pyrimidine synthesis and 1-carbon exchange reactions without going through these two enzymes.
Okay.
So folinic acid is a metabolic form. It's a highly active reduced folate. It's reduced in the number of hydrogens that are attached to it and so forth. And it becomes metabolically active even if you block these enzymes. So that's how it reduced toxicity of antifolates.
So what is your feeling, or have you seen, when I say feeling, what have you seen, or what's in the literature now too? Are they using leucovorin? Well, again, let's go back a step. I'm sorry. So you've investigated is that these children have this autoantibody to the folate receptor and potentially exacerbating or causing the behavioral symptoms issues in autism. And by giving the leucovorin, you're kind of sneaking through a different pathway to increase, I guess, the folic acid. And has this been done in clinical trials yet? Is this just being done like,
Well, it's been done in clinical trials,
and has
and
it shown like to what percentage of children are improving?
so in terms of improvements, we'll get to that, but let me just
Okay,
explain
go ahead.
the biology of what is going on here.
Okay.
The reason why leucovorin works or folinic acid works is because if the folate receptors are blocking, no, the antibodies are blocking the folate receptor, folate can't get in. Folic acid can't get in. 5-methyltetrahydrofolate cannot get in. Giving leucovorin at very high doses activates another pathway called the reduced folate carrier. So now the leucovorin or folinic acid is a go through the reduced folate carrier at a high doses. So that restores cerebral spinal fluid folate status, and as a consequence, the brain folate status. So it
Which is all
normalizes
obviously
brain
super
folate.
important, right?
So that is why leucovorin works very efficiently in this condition to restore brain
Now,
folate.
this is oral or is this injectable?
It's oral.
Okay, so that's great.
In cancer therapy, it is actually given IV
It is, right?
because they want to give a large dose fast.
Right. Well, sometimes I would think too, also, I just out of a concern. I mean, look, as I said, I do in my practice, I do vitamins and stuff like that too. I mean, I know that unfortunately, oral absorption, and especially if you're dealing with kids who may have leaky gut or gut issues, you'd be concerned about the absorption. So, is it possible, do they find that oral is satisfactory to get the levels into the cerebral spinal fluid or wherever it has to get to?
So in fact, these studies have been done and shown that giving oral at 1 milligram per kilogram body weight restores cerebrospinal fluid folate status at the doses that are given to these autistic kids.
Okay, so if I can go to that next step, because again, I'm sure it's what people want to hear. What are they seeing in clinical trials or in practice, the type of hopefully improvement for these children?
So a lot of the trials have been done in kids between, age of 6 to 12, in that
Six
range.
to 12 already. So it's they've really been past the window. Why so? Why so late? Why at that age? Why not earlier?
Well, because by the time a kid is diagnosed with autism, he's already over three. And by the time parents realize they need treatment, and remember, this treatment didn't exist going back. Well, it's more recent.
How recent has it been using the leucovorin?
So, described it in 2004. There have been a few.
Well, that's like 20 years.
Yes, because nobody wanted to believe this. I can
I
tell you stories
understand. I
about this.
understand.
That when we first came out with this, people said, "We don't believe it." In fact, a lot of the funding agencies said, "We don't believe this. We are looking for the autism gene. We want to find the autism gene." And I've been telling them for 20 years, there is no such thing as
There's
autism.
no gene.
There's an, you know, there's a autism genes affected. That is of epigenetic mechanism involving folate.
This is just like unbelievable. Can I ask you one other thing too? There's another way also of, I think, of getting folate to be increased. There's something L-methylfolate or Deplin. How does that compare to the leucovorin?
So L-methyl also works.
It does.
It does. You can give a methyl folate. In fact, when you give, doesn't matter which form of folate you give, during the process of absorption, a substantial amount of the folate form you give is converted to L-methyl. That's the main form in your circulation. And the L-methyl goes in both ways, goes in via the folate receptor alpha as well as the reduced folate carrier. And people have taken L-methyl folate because it's cheaper to buy L-methyl than to buy leucovorin.
Well, isn't it also safer? Well, not really. Doesn't not
No,
much of
not
a difference.
really. No, no.
They're basically the same thing. You have
You
different.
know, see, if you give L-methyl, there's another issue. It has to go through the enzyme methionine synthase. That requires B12. So you have to make sure that
Oh, so you need the B12.
you need
Okay,
the
that
B12.
accompanies that.
For methylfolate to become recycled into the folate pathways, you need B12. Okay? So this is why it's better to give leucovorin. That doesn't require that enzyme. It can go
It
straight.
doesn't. So the leucovorin doesn't need the B12.
That's right.
Oh, interesting. Right, because like I take a supplement which I like a lot. It's got a combination of act. Oh, I want to ask you this too. Has a combination of what they call active B12 and L-methyl tetrahydrofolate.
When you they say active B12, what form is it?
Well, I wanted to ask you that. I think maybe they mean methyl B12. It's also. I'm so glad I have you on this too. The difference between methyl B12 and hydroxy B12, because again, I use this in vitamin therapy with patients, and
So
some people don't tolerate the hydroxy. They do better with the methyl, you know.
I'd like to take a moment to let my listeners know that my new book, Conquering Candida, is now available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. If you believe you suffer from Candida, this is the first book in 50 years since the original book, The Yeast Connection by Dr. William Crook, to give credence to this underdiagnosed and undertreated condition. If you also want to understand gut health and the microbiome, I also believe you will enjoy this book. I do appreciate if you read this book to rate it on Amazon and provide your comments and a review.
No, I mean that was my PhD thesis on intracellular forms of B12.
Oh,
You
you see, I'm glad we
know,
came
but
back to
coming
that
back to
again.
my old stories
All right,
here
so
about
teach me
so
what's the difference between those two forms of
there are
B12?
two B12 dependent enzymes in our body. One is the methionine synthase enzyme, which is a cytosolic enzyme, and it requires methyl B12 as a cofactor.
Okay.
It operates with methyl B12.
Okay.
The second enzyme is the methylmalonyl-CoA mutase, which is a mitochondrial enzyme.
Okay.
That needs 5' deoxyadenosylcobalamin as a cofactor.
The hydroxy one.
No, adenosylcobalamin.
Oh, I know some. Oh, right. It does. Right. Okay.
Okay?
And the
As a
nosyl.
cofactor. So methylcobalamin and adenocobalamin are the two cofactors that actually participate in enzymatic reaction. But hydroxycobalamin is the pre step where no matter what form of B12 the cell sees, it's taken in, and first thing that happens is that form of B12 gets reduced. The cobalt, which is trivalent, gets reduced to single valency, and then the two cofactors are synthesized in the cell. Okay, that's the normal route. The normal route is, so in the circulation, B12 newly absorbed gets bound to a protein called transcobalamin. That transcobalamin then sees a receptor on the cell surface called transcobalamin receptor or CD320. The CD320 transcobalamin complex goes into the lysosome. They are both degraded and B12 is released. When it is relieved, it gets reduced to hydroxycobalamin.
Okay, so just for our listeners, what are the bottom line they want to know is there one B12 that's better than another, or they're kind of same?
Only when there is a
When you say
genetic
no
abnormality.
what?
No, it is better to give methylfolate or adenocobalamin if a kid has a defect in the enzymes that synthesize these forms. These are genetic disorders that have been identified. Then you give massive doses of methylcobalamin or adenocobalamin. Some of it goes in the cell, and before it gets converted back to, hydroxyl, it can actually participate in reaction.
Okay,
So
but let's say you had a patient maybe from India or here in the United States who's a what B12 would you tell them to take to because they're obviously a lot of times not getting
If they're vegetarian and if they're consuming a good diet with legumes, lentils, fermented foods, and so forth, they will get their adequate amount of B12.
Well, I've seen a lot of my patients. I don't know. I mean, the vegetarians tend to have, I would say, low. Well, let's talk about a level for a second too. Maybe I could get some impact on this because the range when you get from the labs is from 200 to like 900,
Yes.
and I've seen season reports in like JAMA, our medical journals. When you're less than 400, that's not a good thing, And by the time you get to 200, 300, you could start to get neurological problems. Like when I was strict vegetarian, my thing went down in the 250s. I did not feel well, and I don't know. I think I was losing my hair, and I felt anxiety. So I tell my patients, I keep them in the six to range at least. So again, if you had a vegetarian patient, what would you, and their B12 was 400 or 300,
So,
what kind of B12 would you recommend for them?
extensive studies and done in countries where vegetarianism, is a large population with a vegetarian diet, for example, in India. And typically, vegetarians do have lower B12 than non-vegetarians, okay? And if their levels are in the low 200s, they are more at a risk of developing B12 deficiency. So maybe they should eat diet rich in B12 or get a B12 supplement on a
All
regular
right, so
basis.
what kind of supplement would you recommend? The
So
methyl?
for this purpose, the cyanocobalamin, which is the cheapest form of B12 you can buy, is a reasonably good supplement. Why? Because it's just converted into hydroxyl and then into the two coenzyme forms.
So it's called cyanocobalamin.
Cobalamin, which is what is in your multivitamin pills.
It's interesting. Part of my practice, I just want to get one more question on this too. Part of my practice over the years, I do allergy, and I've seen a couple of people who swear that they're allergic to B12. Like they have shots, whatever. Is it the cobalt possibly in the B12, or we don't know?
No, in fact, there's a treatment for cyanide poisoning, and that is actually hydroxycobalamin. Massive doses of hydroxycobalamin is given to
Really?
patients with cyanide poisoning. Why? Because the hydroxyl readily reacts with cyanide and captures it into a non-toxic form.
Well, you're saying you can't be allergic to B12?
No, there have been cases where there has been allergic reaction to especially injections of B12. And that may have something to do with, whether what that B12 was in or
How it was
carrier or
prepared.
something. B12 is a soluble vitamin. You excrete a lot of it. Most of it gets stored in your liver and kidneys. The rest gets excreted. In fact, there is no free B12 in circulation. It's all bound to proteins. There's no free B12.
Wow, we covered a lot of information. I've gotten so much out of it. I hope our listeners have also. So I want to do a little bit of a summary because Professor Quadros, you covered so much stuff. So I just for our listeners regarding the autism issue, which is huge. And correct me if I'm not saying this right, because I want our listeners to get this right. So you've said that obviously what you have found out and part of the literature is that parents that contain the folate receptor antibody are at, especially if it's both parents, but even one, they're at higher risk, and they should. It's not a bad idea to get the FRAC test that you come up with. How is that? Is that available in commercial labs, or do you have to have like a special send it to a special laboratory at downstate, like where you are?
No,
How available is this?
it's available in a commercial lab
It is.
in the US. I no longer do that in the research lab.
I hope you get the money from it. Or do you get
Well, the
from
university has, has the
Oh,
patent,
downstate has
and
the
so
Okay, well, we're promoting
yeah,
this now.
I'm a inventor in that patent, so
Oh, good. You should be.
yeah. Now let me preface that with a word of caution. Most clinicians and scientists and obs and gynae and people will say, where are the clinical trials? This is a nice hypothesis, but we do need clinical trials to basically confirm this.
Okay, so you're saying that you saw like how did but you mentioned that
So,
you
yeah. So me, my colleague in Belgium, we have actually done some preliminary studies in parents who are positive for the antibody and who have an autistic child. And we have actually done this. We have put them on folinic acid, and the outcome has been normal child.
Wow. And again, just so we can clarify too, let's say if a parent is observant enough, or a clinician, the pediatrician, to spot that they're seeing something that potentially resembles autism at 1 year old, it would be critical for that child to get the FRAC testing and potentially treated because there really is no harm and there's only an upside.
That's right. In fact, studies that we have done have shown that the younger they are when treatment is initiated, the better the outcome.
Wow. Is there we haven't covered you'd like to add, Professor Quadros?
Now I'm glad that finally there is a lot of attention to this. I think it's very promising. I know people would not listen to me for years. They were after the autism gene.
Yeah, you were like that Professor Killian
Yeah.
McCulkey there. You
Okay.
were
In fact, people had said, we don't believe this. Oh, it couldn't be that simple.
right. Well, that's wasn't that Occam's razor? The simplest explanation is always the right one, you know. So,
That's right. Yeah.
all right.
Look for the simplest explanation, and maybe the answer lies in there.
Yeah. Well, Professor Quadros, as we finish up here, I just want to tell you how much I enjoyed this interview. I've done almost 200 podcasts. I think this might be one of the most important because it can really have a practical application to, a parents who are going to, have children and for the children themselves. So thank you so much and continue your amazing work.
Yeah, thank you, and welcome for this opportunity to participate in this. Where can people get this podcast if they want
This,
to?
well, let me just say this before I say they can get this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, but I have a bigger question. Where can people go to find out about your work?
It's all published, it's all out there.
So can they go to, I mean, I found you were quoted in the New York Times, but can they find you like on, I guess, the Downstate or the
No,
autism?
they can just Google me.
And what about the autism societies? Are they promoting their work yet or
There,
not
there are
really?
there are some of my presentations, either the Brain Foundation or maybe there are a couple of other places where I have spoken, and all that is available on YouTube,
Okay.
and also the publications are all available on Scholar.
Okay. This is fantastic stuff. So yeah, we're gonna publish this in the next week or two, and I'll keep you posted.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me here on UK Health Radio. I'm Dr. Dean Mitchell. If today's conversation was useful to you, please share it with someone who could benefit. You can find every episode of The Smartest Doctor in the Room wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, stay well.